Late in the afternoon. It's a long taxi ride from the Medina to get here, north of Marrakech, at the École Supérieure d'Art Visuel, a modern and severe white building in a rather elegant neighborhood, not that far from the Giditz area. Children are playing outside in the backyard, while the voice of the muezzin is resonating in the area. The super modern art school is the venue of If You Are So Smart, Why Ain't You Rich?, a sound exhibition curated by the Berlin-based duo Bonaventure Sorbehien-Digung and Pauline Dutreligne. The exhibition brings together 12 international artists working primarily with sound and asks them to thematize the ambiguity and the discrepancy between the intellectual and the economical capital. If You Are So Smart, Why Ain't You Rich? Is more than a question. It's a pervasive lament for the inability of some to translate their wisdom into success. It is also the title of a musical piece by composer Julius Eastman and a prelude to the curatorial statement behind the exhibition. Radio Papesse talked about it with Bonaventure Digung.
So Alia Septi, the director of the Biennial, invited me to propose a project. And I've always wanted to do something with Julius Eastman, who to me was a special figure in the arts and in music as a performer, as a musician. And I came up with a concept based on one of his pieces, one of his compositions called If You're So Smart, Why Ain't You Rich? You know, and then invited Pauline Dutreligne to help me curate the exhibition. So the project is basically, the concept we propose is an understanding on the position of knowledge in society, you know, epistemology in society, but also where knowledge meets economics. Also, what position do they take in our lives in society? I mean, I'll give a very personal example. You know, when I was like 17 years old, living in Cameroon, there was a guy in the market selling Newsweek, the magazine. And we would go to the market and buy a Newsweek that was 1 year old because you were fascinated about what was inside. So there was a huge kind of a zeal and a zest for knowledge, you know. So I would like to see where society today positions this knowledge, you know, about everything. But then also you have the tendency to think that society is driven today by economics more, you know. So I think today people will be more interested in the kind of mobile phone you have than a new Newsweek, which is 1 year old, of course. But then I don't want to keep it as banal as that. It was about seeing how artists would talk about or would deal with these concepts of knowledge and economics through the prism of art, taking Julius Eastman as a kind of a starting point, not necessarily an inspiration, because most of them hadn't even heard of Julius Eastman, you know, who was an Afro-American composer who did revolutionary stuff, to my opinion, in the 70s and 80s, who in his radicality was, of course, not really recognized, you know, being black, being gay and standing for it, you know. In his compositions, you could hear the titles Crazy Nigger, Gay Guerrilla. And he said, to his opinion, gays have to act like a guerrilla. You know, there should be a kind of an action. There should be something radical about it, you know, to position yourself in the society, you know, or asking the question in a composition piece, if you're so smart, why aren't you rich, you know? Which I think really is a kind of a marvelous summary of his engagement with socioeconomic, sociopolitical tendencies in his time and today even.
The question could also be, where is the friction between a knowledgeable society and the current economics of knowledge? And this question makes even more sense if we think about the venue that hosts the show. An art academy whose annual fee is around 5,000 euros, providing few folks in Marrakesh an education that is a luxury good. So the question could be also, where the discrepancy between knowledge and economics stand in the system of art education?
I think it's a brilliant question, and you can look at it through so many levels. First of all, the knowledgeable society is a really Western construct. You know, in German they say Wissensgesellschaft. The idea behind this is that actually, it's actually an economic aspect. You know, they say knowledge is the foundation for the building of an economic system. That's what makes the knowledgeable society. So you think it's just about giving knowledge to people so that people know more, but it's about knowing more to make more money. You know, that is what it's about. So that is interesting to understand. Okay, the second part of your question is the economics of knowledge. How to sell knowledge, you know, which of course, your example is for sure brilliant. Because art, in many contexts in the world, is an absolute luxury. So actually, I'm not surprised that we are sitting in a school where students pay, and look at the infrastructure, 5,000 euros to attend. I'm not surprised about that. It is an extremely elitist thing. But then, it is important also to use this knowledge they get, or to see how they can reflect more on the society. So if somebody like, I don't know where to which art school Emeka Ogbo went to, but then he is able to go to the streets of Lagos, put his microphone, and capture and narrate a history of that society in a way that has never been done before, you know, from one to one, you know. And that's the brilliant thing about sound. That is why the exhibition is supposed to be a sound exhibition, a different way of narrating contemporary history. So the economics of knowledge is an interesting thing, and this is an example of it. You know, so it's paying a lot to get knowledge. But I don't know, I cannot judge the quality of the knowledge. You know, but you mentioned something before. This guy sitting in Sadan Afif's piece, sitting there and saying something about mathematics or whatever, you know, and people sit there and ask questions. Why do so many people sit there? Because that is a conventional way of passing through knowledge, especially in the African context, you know. So, you don't need to pay 5,000 euros to get that knowledge. But that knowledge is also very crucial to the working of the society, you know. So the guy that sits there, the griot that sits there and sings and gives the history of whoever sits there and teaches you how to grow this plant or how to deal with this situation is also passing through knowledge.
And we are talking about sound as a medium that transmits knowledge. We are talking about orality and storytelling. That is what this Biennale of Marrakesh has a lot to do with, the dialogical end of cultural heritage. It would be interesting to deepen the gap between our Western archival fever and the approach to archiving and digitalizing culture in those regions where orality and informality still play the lead.
So it's a fundamental part, and it's not archived by recording them on cassette or on a CD, but through memory. So that is the part of the of orality. And we talked about Derrida before, and he taken from a Greek culture of writing as a kind of a pharmacon, you know, which is the same thing with digitalizing or recording, a kind of a pharmacon. Because as soon as you write, it has something positive and something negative, because you no longer retain it in the original way through which you can embody it. You know, you give it away, you write it, or you record it somehow. So the next generation would not necessarily know how to sing it. They will listen to it. So it's something different. So both have their advantages and their disadvantages. I, for one, I like the legacy of archiving using the body. There's this brilliant publication by Esiaba Irobi where he talks about the body as a site of discourse, you know, the body as a record, as an archive, of history, of course, of sound. And he gives this nice example of the slaves carrying music, and you get the music 500 years after in the Americas. The sound is, of course, archived. On the one hand, it's important to archive. And I also think that Paul Bowles' archiving and recordings were extremely important. It's another form of documentation. So all are legitimate, you know. So he who likes the oral part of it should go to that. He who likes the conserved part of it is like tomatoes. You have fresh tomatoes and you have conserved tomatoes. It's everybody's preference, you know. So you get the one archived that way, you can also have the fresh one.
Life in Tanger at night was very strange. It was a big trip, like a 2 hours, and we was like a little fish going in a pool of time.
Coming back to the show, if you are so smart, why aren't you rich? Brings together videos, sculptural installations, sound pieces, sound installations. You can have a look at If You Are So Smart, yntreach.org and know more about the artist invited. In particular, Brandon Labelle and Yunus Baba Ali's work stand for their position taken as artists in relation to the uneasy tug of war between knowledge and economics.
Economy under his steps, in the things he does, it envelops him.
Of course, it's a sound exhibition, but then there are other things that come into play as well, because as you know, to create sound you need a body. So the body can be the physical, your body, but it could also be a video, it could also be an installation. So we need something to create sound. But it's a sound exhibition. The piece by Brandon Labelle is an installation on the terrace on the ground floor. And basically, he talks about the hobo nation, the hobo camp, so to say. And the hobo is a term that comes from America of the early 20th century, a group of nomadic people that moved from one place to the other and worked, you know. But as much as they wanted their freedom, they were also captured by an economic system. It's a kind of at the threshold of being captured by an economic system and also trying to flee away from an economic system, you know. Just like we have in Europe with many Roma tribes, you know, or just as we have with the system day people, you know, moving from one place to the other to evade taxes, but you also do an economics, you know. You don't want to be caught by the system. The whole construct of the hobo, you know, also brings a kind of a connection between the hobo and the artist as a nomadic entity. You know, the artist as a kind of a wandering dog. A very interesting installation. He brings in Edouard Glissant's The Poetics of Relation. He brings in parts of Lafargue's The Right to be Lazy. So a complex piece. Then I could say something about Younes Baba Ali's piece. It's two pieces. One is the Carousel Sonore, which shows as a video of a kind of a performance that was done in the streets, and the object itself. And the object is an object that is used in the cities in Morocco basically to transmit knowledge of the Quran and also to sell the Quran. You know, so these guys go around with the speakers on this kind of a pram, you know, or kind of a perambulator or whatever. You know, you have the speakers on them. And actually, he did a call for sound artists to propose pieces that were then played around the city, and people heard the sound. And it's interesting, the documentation, how people come up to you and ask, what is this? Because they know this just through the selling of the Quran, you know. And then with the whole documentation process, you know, he did a lot of printing, a lot of information on this so people could take along, and the interest. And I think the interesting thing about Younes's work is how just break into normality, you know, and mediating, you know, using art to mediate, to bring, create a kind of a conversation, you know, but using very normal things. So the other piece is Tele Vendita, which is a piece of a guy on TV that normally sells just very banal products or whatever, jewelry. But then he has the chance now to sell Younes Baba Ali's artwork. And the interesting thing is also this very normal thing you wouldn't like to watch on TV, but then it comes in with this really strong piece and intellectual pieces, and this guy comes in and tries to sell them to the layman. I think his work is very much about mediation, about selling this to the layman, to us.
Younes Vavali ha qualcosa in più degli altri. Appartiene a una categoria di persone che hanno capito che con i suoni e con i movimenti possiamo percepire emozioni ancora più forti rispetto a una semplice immagine. E ho il piacere di presentarvi, e quest'oggi finalmente potete avvicinarvi, a tre opere molto esclusive. Opere che non si sono mai viste prima d'ora in commercio, e quindi saranno le prime edizioni di queste opere, che potrete, con un semplice colpo di telefono, chiamarmi e farsele portare a casa.
This interview was recorded at the École Supérieure d'Art Visuel in Marrakech, and no certain answer can be given to the ambitious and provocative question: if you are so smart, why aren't you rich?